Okay, today is December 9th, 2021. There will be 19 Board of Equalization hearings presented today. On behalf of the petitioner, Bodmer Properties, LLC, Mr. Adams and Mrs. Adams, there will be, petition will be BE2021-22 through BE2021-39, parcel numbers 115210031-115210048 and BE202140, parcel number 126160109. This is considered a commercial property. The petition is scheduled for 30 minutes. The appellant has, and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight their points of evidence that they have to write. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions of the board.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, myself, Gregory Garcia, and Joe Chris, the chair, who is on the phone, and our clerk, Jennifer Mendelez. Sorry. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state board and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessed year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you that will be testifying today affirm that the testimony
about
the will
be the truth?
I do.
Yes, I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a written notice of the appeal portion is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documents, data provided by you and the assessor's office, and we have reviewed it. The appellant will present his case first, and then the assessor will present her case. Please begin with your case first, Mr. Adams.
Okay, thank you. The reason that we're here today, I've owned this property for about 45 years, and it's sort of been almost a quasi-public park for people that like off-road vehicles and other people that have gone on the property. It's a big chunk of property that I think you probably all know where it is on Road 100 between there and the river. And it hasn't been able to be developed because there's no sewer that serves it. So the city of Pasco started a sewer that came to the property, and then the property owners, myself being the major one, were paying to have the sewer brought around the edge of the property. The sewer is almost a mile away from Road 100. It's down by the gravel pit and by the old Wilson property, if you know that area. And it crosses Burns and then goes up to serve other people. So even though most of the property isn't served by the sewer, we're trying to get some interest for development. And we found that just taking people out there and saying, look, you know, we're going to be selling pieces of this property doesn't work. They want to know, well, what piece is going to be sold? So it was obvious that we needed to create separate lots on the property so we could talk to people about them. And we have closed no escrows. We do have some people that are in sort of a look-see situation that are potentially interested, but none of that can be done. We have a number of steps we have to go to. The first one that was frankly a surprise to me is State Fish and Game came in, and they said it's shrub steppe habitat, and the 300 acres of it is shrub steppe habitat, and that we have to make some sort of agreement with them to get by that designation. Then we found out that we have to do a cultural study that is presently underway with somebody that deals with the tribes and hopefully has a good relation with them, and they're doing that to see if there's any connection with any cultural Native American thing. So far they've found that. Then we need to come up with a transportation system. I've just hired a transportation engineer from that is through my engineer, which is PBS in Kennewick, and they're supposed to come up. There's been some transportation work done on there by the city, but this new engineer is supposed to come up with a more extensive study that covers all the streets that will be in there. At the same time, Jason Maddox from PBS is looking at how we can connect the property to sewer, and also how wide the streets are going to need to be, whether or not we do the full width in the beginning or later. And so that's another thing that's under consideration. And then to pay for all this, and this is very important, and this I think is important to the city also, we're looking at doing tax increment financing, which is something new in the state of Washington. It's called a TIF. And how it works is that when we develop it and sell lots on which people build buildings and housing and apartments, that the increase in the tax would go to pay bonds that can be used to pay for the infrastructure that we need before we can do the development. So that's what we are working now on, doing the program and the qualification for a TIF. And the city of Pasco has a consultant, Bob Stowe, who is working on that. And so that's why it's important that the tax assessment stays relatively, where it is now. It went up quite a bit when I had one lot in there rezoned commercial, and I don't know why I did it. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. And my taxes then went from, they went about six times as high when I did that, and that's 5 years ago. I've been paying those taxes on it, but haven't been able to do anything because there's no commercial to be developed on there because there's no sewer and no roads, and the city isn't going to allow that until the sewer, roads, and infrastructure, utilities, all of that is in there. And that's probably a couple of years away, maybe three. We hope to be started on trying to get a plan together and getting through all these curves and maybe be able to get some improvement plans approved in a year to 18 months from now. And then it's going to be another year probably to get everything, the sewers in, the roads in, utilities in, construction done, so that we, most of these lots that are on here, I included a plan that shows the different lots, but you can't get to them. There's no roads or anything, except for the ones that are on Burns Road or on Road 100. And those we can't use unless we have on Road 100 until we have a sewer to it. So we're a long ways away from having the type of values that the assessor wants to place on these parcels. Eventually, when we get them developed and we get buildings on there, the assessed value is going to be much higher than what she has. But what's on there now is not realistic because we can't do a thing with it because of all these barriers that we have to go through. The city of Pasco has been a wonderful partner because they want to see this area of Broadmoor developed also. And the Broadmoor area is more than just my property. But nobody else has gone in and divided it into lots so that they could deal with separate lots the way I did. And that's what caught the assessor's attention, is those lots had to be assigned tax numbers, which meant that they had to be assigned a assessed valuation. And it's just way premature for the assessed valuations that were put on there. 2 or 3 years from now, the assessed valuations are probably going to be low when we get buildings and things on there and we get the, and everything works out and we do get it developed. Who knows, a recession or something could happen and we'd end up owning the property. It won't be another 45 years, but I'll end up owning the property even longer. So, and I think the city manager wanted to talk a little bit about the plans. We've been meeting very regularly on all of us working together to try to get this. It's not only going to be good for Pasco, it's really going to be a nice area, a draw for the whole Tri-Cities if it works out the way we hope it works out. But we need this, the assessed valuation to remain where it is. And the values that I put on it, I just went in with the current valuation or the current taxes that we're paying and put it in per acre and then put that on each lot based on how many acres were in each lot. So that's, it's nothing scientific on how I came up with those valuations, but I thought if we keep it at the same tax rate, I'm not asking that it be lowered. I should have done that before, but I'm not asking that it be lowered. I'm just asking that it stay the same so that we are eligible for tax increment financing so that we can develop this wonderful project for Pasco that we hope will be coming. And Dave, if you want, or do you have any questions of me?
No, we need to let the assessor do her side.
Okay. So. Do you want Dave to talk about the TIF first?
We can after Nikki does her portion.
Okay, sure.
So it appears the appellant wants to speak about these as a whole, and so talking for 10 minutes and then breaking and starting a new hearing is not going to be to benefit of Mr. Adams, which I don't... Are you wanting to present all your information at one time rather than breaking it up into 10-minute increments? The idea is we're hearing information for this specific parcel right now, so you have 10 minutes to do that, and your 10 minutes is already over, so... I'd be okay with proposing just giving a blanket maybe 40 minutes to present verbally. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Do you want to do that?
That's fine with me. Okay. If you want to give them some more time, and then I can go. Okay.
Okay, sure. And then you want...
Well, should the city manager speak now?
Sure.
I don't want to waste everybody's time by taking each individual parcel because the concept is the same for the entire, all of the parcels that we're just asking that it stay the same right now so that we can.
So you have 30 minutes left.
2 or 3 years.
And then whoever you want to speak has 30 more minutes to speak. So.
Well, I don't think we're going to all need that much, but.
Okay. Well,
we have a lot of people here from the city, the assistant city manager, the planning director.
Dave's been sworn in, so he can go ahead and speak.
So, good morning, Madam Chair and board members. For the record, Dave Zabel, city manager for City of Pasco. As Mr. Adams said, we have some other staff here they may be able to provide the board some additional information or answers to specific questions that I can't. But, you know, I am actually here as a neutral party. I mean, the city does have an interest, as does the county, as to, right. you know, what the taxes would be on this on these properties. But my goal is really just to provide some information, answer any questions the board may have. I haven't looked specifically at the values. You know, I've had a conversation with Mr. and Mrs. Adams about their concern over their values, and they've asked me a little bit of some questions that I thought, you know, this might be some good background for the Board of Equalization or the County Assessor's Office perhaps even have. But so this is obviously a huge scale development in the making. And in those kind of situations, it's not like a lot on Court Street where you have water, sewer running right past it, and a road already built to it, and the alley in the back of it, and you go get a building permit, and you're ready to go. This is the development of these types of parcels, and particularly one this size, is pretty incremental. You have it starts with the comp plan designation, which just happened last year. I mean, there was a change in the comp plan designation. With our comp plan update, but there's still areas that we need to. I have no clue whether how this property was assessed, but the zoning has not changed. The underlying zoning on the property has not changed between last year and this year, except for a swath of about 600 feet, amounting to a few acres, kind of along Broadmoor Boulevard. Beyond the comp plan designation and zoning issues, you have permitting. There have been no permits issued for this property. Environmental review is another big piece of development, and there's a lot underway. You heard from Mr. Adams. We learned this year that Fish and Wildlife has deemed this to be a shrub step habitat. And Mr. Adams, I think, cited 300. I talked to the planning director and the consultant that's working for the city on the Broadway Interchange project, and who's also kind of helping us with the city review of these properties. He's thinking it's probably more between 400 and 500 acres of shrub steps. So that's going to have a adverse impact on the value of property. Now, it's not a plus because you're going to have to mitigate whatever you wind up destroying. Followed by design and engineering of infrastructure, none has really occurred. We did do an LID with Mr. Adams and a number of properties to the north to bring sewer up to the north of Burns Road and prepare that area for development consistent with the recently adopted comprehensive land use plan. No approvals obviously have occurred since none of that design or engineering has occurred. And then we have the construction of the infrastructure. Outside of sewer LID over by the gravel pit, there's really not been any infrastructure improvements that would benefit the properties in this area. And even that one is a trunk line. It's not a line that they're going to be able to connect side sewers to. They're going to need to build an internal collection system to the property and to the different lots in the property. So they're not going to be able to do a side sewer out the back of their lot the sewer is located in. That's just not going to be allowed. That's a trunk main. And then the funding of it. And Mr. Adams had talked a little bit about this TIF, and I want to just kind of explain what that is a little bit. Transportation. Tell me.
Traffic impact fee.
Pardon?
Tax increment financing.
Yes. So the funding of all the improvements that need to happen to even make these lots usable, we're talking probably $50 million to $100 million somewhere in them. I mean, you got roads to build, water, sewer lines, irrigation lines. Don't even have irrigation figured out as far as the source supply at this point in time. So a ton of work left to do before any of these properties are really ready to be developed. Why is an accurate assessment important? And it really kind of goes back to this tax increment financing tool that the legislature authorized this last session. And so what basically it is it's the difference between the baseline assessed valuation of the property and what that property is assessed at when it's improved. And so this increment here is used to service debt on bonds under this new law. You can use this increment or a portion of the increment to service debt on these new bonds to finance water, sewer, road improvements, things like that. It's hard to make this thing happen with all, and there's a lot of offsite that needs to happen too. Broadmoor Boulevard needs to be widened. The interchange needs improvements. We're in the process of doing that, working with DOT on that right now and trying to make that happen, you know, as well as all the utilities that need to occur out there. So that delta, we don't want to cook the books, right? I'm not asking the board to, you know, on the city's behalf, hey, make this really, so we have a really big delta and we'll have plenty of money to build these improvements. Not asking for that at all, but I think we need to be really careful about, is it premature? Are we at a point where it's a little premature? Maybe we're making some assumptions on what this property's worth based on the condition that it's in that may or may not be accurate. I mean, we need to kind of look at, it seems to me the board probably needs to look at the assumptions of how did the assessed valuation of the property go from last year to this year? When really what's happened over the last year is, like I said, the applicant rezoned through the city process, 5-10 acres of property from rural transition to commercial, and it kind of piggybacked on the existing commercial, just moved the line up to the north a little bit. Mr. Adams mentioned he did a segregation of the lots, and most of those lots are still landlocked. Segregation did not dedicate right away to the city, so there's no access to those lots internally, except, as Mr. Adams said, along the edge. And then the designation of 400 to 500 acres as shrub step, which is obviously going to have an adverse impact on the value of the property. So those are the things that have happened in real life between last year and this year. There's been a lot of talk. There's been a lot of stuff in the newspaper. But none of those properties have closed. They're still all under Mr. Adams' ownership. And honestly, I'm not here arguing for on his behalf. But it is important to the city, and it's important to the county, too, because the county gets a share of the property tax. That delta, as I talked about before, between the value of the property today and the developed value of the property, that's going to fuel the ability to make some major improvements out into that area, infrastructure-wise, including improvements that will allow those properties to be utilized. And that is going to speed development on. If we inaccurately raise this delta, or this current assessed valuation up to here, that delta shrinks, and our ability to really speed the development of that property is impacted adversely. So it's in our interest, but I know the board's charge here is to make sure it's accurate more than future strategy. But I do want you to understand why that's why the city's at the table, because that preserving this delta between making sure this baseline is accurate, that is super important, because that's really going to make a difference for the future of both city and the county in terms of property taxes achieved off those sites over the coming years. Okay. I think that's all I wanted to share with the board this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Adams, do you have anybody else as a witness?
Well, does the board have any questions specifically that they would like to pose with any of the staff that's here?
Burke, do you have any questions?
No.
Otherwise, I think that most of them are here in case there were some questions from the board that they'd be here to answer. And is support for our position.
Okay.
What we're asking.
We might have questions after we hear from
Great. The
assessor's office.
Okay.
Okay, so Nikki?
Okay. Thank you. All right, so there's a lot of information, and I have prepared individual appraisals for each parcel.
Yes.
Per Washington State law, we are required to value all property at 100% of its market value of its highest and best use each year. So there's been a lot of discussion about the potential changes or what I was looking at between last year and this year. the crux of it isn't that anything happened to these parcels that made them be worth more other than the market, and that we were undervalued. So I agree with Mr. Zabel that establishing a baseline for him for the tax increment financing is important, but I'm statutorily required to set that baseline at 100% of market value each year. So the percentage of increase isn't something that I can consider when I'm looking at a new value. I'm looking at the property in its entirety, fresh each year, and what the market is indicating for value. So you have prepared for you 19 individual appraisals with very specific information for each one. Each of these parcels has differences in topography, access, river proximity, zoning, you name it, development costs that would be associated with it. Those were all taken into consideration for each individual parcel. With reference to the landlocked parcels, that's also an adjustment that we make. It's not worth nothing because it's inaccessible. It's simply a secondary lot, meaning Broadmoor Properties LLC owns the entire area, so they can grant access, develop the infrastructure, and provide access at any time. But it is worth less because it doesn't already have that infrastructure run to it, so that's also an adjustment that we made. So you can see for each parcel, they have, like I said, differences in the adjustment to the land value, depending on whether or not it's a secondary lot, topography issues, development, access, and zoning. So truly, in the assessor's office, we just want an accurate assessment. The county doesn't make any more money because assessments are higher. As we know, the budgets are what they are. And it just distributes the shift of the tax burden to the taxpayers throughout the county. So we want that to be done in the most equitable manner possible. So I reached out to Mr. Adams when we spoke a couple years ago. He did provide me with the reclamation plan. So I've been collecting information for about 4 years on this. When the appeal was sent in, I reached out again. We're required to have documentation. So when we're talking about development costs, all I have are the research that I can do and the things that I know from other appraisals. So what is a typical development cost on a property such as this? I have to fill in the blank with what I can quantify from the market and other things that I know. Without specific information on development costs for each parcel specifically, what is it going to cost to run infrastructure to this parcel? What are the city requirements? So when I didn't receive anything from Mr. Adams and I didn't receive anything from his attorney, I started reaching out to city, Mr. Zabel's office. I spoke with 4 or 5 different members of the city planning and development office, and each one of them I asked, I'm trying to do my research. I'm trying to do my due diligence. I need to know the barriers to entry. I need to know the costs associated. I need to know if there's anything that I don't know. No one was able to provide me with anything. So we're talking in generalities. Well, yes, the plan was changed to this. The zoning is that. You know, these things take time. Well, when you're talking in a specific appraisal, I've already accounted for all of that. I mean, a negative 65% development cost adjustment to a land value is significant. That's higher than what I was seeing in the Road 68 area because of these barriers to entry. I've accounted for everything that I could reasonably, with the topography, with the development costs, with everything that I could possibly do without specific information from the appellant. So again, it has to be at the highest and best use of what it is right now. There's been a lot of talk of we can't do anything with this property. You know, zoning isn't allowed to change because the city isn't sure what they're going to do. But as referenced, just this year, there was the large swath of land that was changed in zoning from RT to C1. That's 4 or 5 commercial properties that effectively the zoning was changed because the city is ready to start moving incrementally on these. So, for example, BE2021-25, the Costco is already being started on this parcel. It's not that nothing can be developed on these. It's zoned C1. It has access. The Costco permit has been pulled. Dirt has been moved. Development has begun. That's an anchor for an area. In reference to appraisal, that means, you know, the media isn't on this topic, maybe, just giving us a bunch of hype. There are over 100, you know, retailers looking to move into the Broadmoor area. They're waiting for the city. They know that it's going to be, you said three, I'm thinking probably 5 to 8 years out before we start to see any of this really moving. But what is it worth now? Developers are looking at that. And for instance, on the east side of Pasco, up in the industrial corridor, you know, we're having ridiculous land sales happen. We're at 20% of the market value. People are wanting to come to Pasco to develop. The land is worth something. And just because a sale hasn't taken place on these yet, it doesn't mean that it's not primed to. And I have to be at 100% of market value. So I've accounted for the development costs that I can estimate and quantify from my own research and information without specific adjustments from the appellant and possibly the city, utility companies, whatever it may take. I can't change those numbers. I would definitely be interested in looking at it in the future, but I feel that if my assessment is off, I'm low. I'm at 80% of market value in the surrounding area, so I can't fathom that I would be over 100 on these. With reference to the TIF, the tax increment financing, I think that's really the crux of all of this. We've been provided zero market data, zero quantifiable evidence, zero appraisal information on what these properties are worth from the appellant. And I think the real concern, which I can totally understand, is that if the values were to stay where they are and this increase was to be taken in a future year, then the city would definitely benefit from that happening at a later date. That doesn't change the assessor's office statutory requirement by law to be at 100% of market value each year.
Thank you, Nikki. Greg, do you have questions?
Nope.
No. Joe, do you have any questions?
I guess the one of the questions I have to, just to make sure I understand it.
You're going to have to speak up.
This land was subdivided this last year or this year?
What land was subdivided this year or last year?
It was a lot segregation. It's really not a subdivision. There was a lot segregation so that we could take this large piece of property and put it into smaller lots so that we can discuss with people that potentially they may hopefully be interested in purchasing one in the future.
Was that done this year or last year? 2020 or 2021?
I think it was this year. This year?
Okay.
It was done 2021?
Yes.
Okay.
It's page 3 of the appellant's packet is the separate lots, how they are now and before. Do you remember how many parcels they were before?
I think there were two.
Two? I was going to say two or three.
The gravel pit and the rest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there was one of them is on the other side of the freeway that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Go ahead, Joe.
So I guess my question is, how would those two parcels change in value if they weren't subdivided? And maybe I'm using the wrong terminology.
So that's a question directed at me, or?
That would be for you, Nikki.
Okay.
For you, Nikki.
When you're looking at the value of land decreases as the size increases, so the margin of decreasing utility. So the first acre, let's say, of these commercially zoned parcels, whereas before if it had been one 300-acre parcel of RT zoned land, the first acre is worth the most, then maybe the next 4 acres are worth incrementally less, and then up to 10 acres they're worth a little bit less, and then from then on it's considered excess land. So when you subdivide, it does increase the value, which is why I've been really careful to make those adjustments for secondary lots if they don't already have their own access, so I'm not overstating the value of each parcel. Does that answer your question? So as they're broken down into smaller pieces, then each parcel then has that first acre that's worth the most and then incrementally decreasing, as opposed to one large parcel where most of it is just considered excess land.
Okay, so nothing changes to the land, just the imaginary line put on it.
Correct, until that infrastructure is run.
Right. Okay. Hey, Mr. Adams, I have a question for you. You say that, do you have any other evidence that from the fish and game determining which acres? You said like 400 acres. Do you know where those 400 acres are going to be located?
That's still up in the air. They have not provided that information to me. The state fish and game went on there and they somehow have a system where they measure it, and my engineer has somebody on staff that's going back and is looking at their measurements to see if they agree with how much is on there. Some of the shrub step habitat was eliminated when the sewer went through there, and it's a question of how much it is. But the state and my engineer they're still negotiating how much would be subject to that.
Okay, so that gives you the quantity, but the location is, I mean, that's, we're talking about land here that can't be developed?
I think that the possibility in the future might be that we go buy land somewhere else and sort of trade it out as an indication of what they might do. In other words, we have to buy our way out of step shrub habitat, and how much that's going to be and how many acres we have to buy our way out of, all of that is subject to negotiation sometime in the future. That's one of the unknowns that we have in trying to develop the property. So sometime in the future, we're hoping to reach an agreement with them. It's not a guarantee, but we're hopeful.
Dave has an answer for you.
So this, the city does have some involvement in this as well, because we're the environmental permitting agency. So what we know is the current designation is about 500 acres on the property. That's the state maps, the mapping that's available right now, and what their official position is. It encompasses.
And you've seen that number?
Yes, yeah. And it, well, I haven't personally seen it. Our planning director has, but we can produce that. But it encompasses all of the commercial and the property that's zoned commercial, and then a considerable amount of the remainder of the property. What Mr. Adams is talking about is a process we're going through now with State Fish and Wildlife of a field evaluation to confirm their designation, because things have happened on that site. The wind's blown since they made the designation and maybe buried some of it. You know how it is, sand dunes. And, you know, we've had some, the sewer line, you know, was in part of that. And that was permitted. So the city and the property owner didn't do anything wrong. It was a permitted, went through its own environmental process to build it. But that's disrupted some of it. So the value of that shrub step area is not 100%. And so what the process they're going through now is actually just evaluating the site, working with Fish and Wildlife, Mr. Adams' consultant, and the city, and making a determination on where are those areas now and what value are they. Is this 100% shrub step? Is this degraded to way, and so degraded to 50% or 75%? And then from that, there'll be ultimately a mitigation plan. I mean, we're not, it's unlikely the site when it develops will have a bunch of preserved shrub step out there. As Mr. Adams said, there's going to be a mitigation site that provides equal or greater value.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The other question I would have is what percentage of this shrub step area compared is compared to the total the total land. I mean, 500 acres sounds like quite a bit.
But if you take the gravel pit out of the equation, because obviously nothing is growing in that in the pit, and look at the balance of the land, they've pretty much designated, except for the very highest of the sand dunes, they've pretty much designated everything else as shrub step habitat.
Okay, that answers my question. Thanks.
Okay.
And that answered my question. Thank you, Joe. All right.
Can I follow up a bit on that?
Yes, go ahead, Nikki.
Okay, this is Nikki. So I would be interested to know when the decision is made from the state, what the cost to mitigate would be. Without knowing that cost, there isn't a reasonable adjustment that we can make to the parcel that would be in addition to the negative adjustment I've already made for unforeseeable development costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Again, we have to quantify what we're doing, and so adding the cost to mitigate the shrub step wildlife in addition to running sewer, in addition to running roads, and all the other infrastructure needed, but that's already been estimated and tried to be included. So we'd need specifics on that in order to change it from the typical adjustment to a parcel-specific adjustment. Does that make sense? I mean, if we estimated at the 100% of all of this land that isn't the gravel pit, what would be the worst-case scenario of a cost to mitigate that? I don't know. Those are the kinds of questions I was wanting to know when we were setting values on these parcels. But without that information, I don't know how to adjust for it.
And I don't have the information either. So, I mean, you mentioned that we have been not cooperative from the city in giving you development costs. The reason is there has been a comp plan for the city, but there's also coming up next year a specific plan for the Broadmoor area. That has to be approved before anything can be zoned. And then when we get into, we've got somebody, as I said, a traffic engineer that's planning what they think should be there for all of the roads and infrastructure. We have an engineer working on what's going to be needed for the sewer based on uses and gravity flow. So there's a huge number of development costs that we don't know. The city has decided what we need to do for them to allow us to develop it, then we have to go out and make those plans. Then we have to go put it out to bid to get an estimate from somebody as to what it's going to cost.
Yeah.
And we're talking probably 2 or 3 years down the road before we get to that point. So
right.
It's not that we're withholding information from you that doesn't exist.
No.
So we just can't.
I understand.
We're trying to cooperate.
I didn't mean to imply that anyone was being uncooperative. That was not my intention at all. Without specifics, and if no one can give me specifics, that's all I meant. That you're right, they don't exist yet. We could estimate a best-case scenario and a worst-case scenario and have a range. But without those numbers being available, I have to use the numbers that I've been given or have been able to deduct from the Road 68 area when it was being developed or the East Pasco Industrial Corridor when it's being developed. What is the cost to develop a large swath of land that has zero infrastructure? I have to use those numbers instead because that is what I do have.
So we're a completely different animal than Road 68. The reason I've held on to this property for 45 years is I didn't want to impose another Road 68 on this county because I think it's a quagmire. So what we're trying to do is be very determined and methodical in going in and take one step at a time to develop in a comprehensive plan with good traffic flow. And we've spent a lot of money both from the city and myself on traffic flow to make sure that we're not going to build something that becomes the next Road 68. We want to, and it's Road 68 was just right along Route 68. This is a much more comprehensive thing that goes a mile away from Road 100 or Broadmoor Boulevard. So it's not something that can be compared to Road 68, and we don't want to be compared to Road 68.
Understandably.
And you were talking about 100 retailers being in there, and you're quoting from a newspaper article where the broker that's working with me, he's the salesman. You know, he's trying to create excitement about the Broadmoor area. And he's talking about, you know, being 100 retailers. Maybe that might be possible. I think it's a little bit of a salesman's exaggeration, but we're going to have some higher density residential, which is what the city is indicating that the specific plan that they're going to come up with next year, they want a lot of residential in there because there's a need for quality apartments. And so we're looking at the market to see if we can get higher end apartments in there, and it's looking like the Tri-City market, people can afford to have nicer apartments, and that's what we want to provide. We've got a potential for apartments for over 55 and for market rate apartments and garden style apartments. So we're trying to, some of these lots that we have right now will probably be divided more down the road because they're too big for one developer to digest. So but this is also up in the air, and I wish my real estate broker would be here. He's in Boston today, but he could explain that he's a good broker. You know, he creates excitement. He talks about what's going to be there. And we kid him that he was talking about people are going to go gaga about what we're going to have there. So we call him the gaga guy. But it's just conjecture. We hope it happens. The rezone was not that big. There's some commercial lots that were part residential transition and part commercial when we did this lot segregation. So it make no sense. The city on their own said that makes no sense, and so they rezoned the 600 feet that were the northern part of these parcels to commercial, so the parcels would be all commercial. It's not because of anything new happening. It's just that when we did the lot segregation, they want to have those lots that we talked 5 years ago when I rezoned them commercial. Those lots now have been have a designation, even though they can't be developed because they don't have sewer. The sewer will have to be done to go about a mile away down to the main trunk line when that happens, so they can't be developed until then. You mentioned a large membership warehouse store, the name of which I will not divulge. We are not in contract with them, but we have talked to them. And they're very interested in seeing what we come up with on our infrastructure plan before they specifically will say that they want to sign a contract with us and go forward. I know the newspaper treats it like a done deal, but trust me, it's not. They're not the easiest people in the world. I shouldn't say that on the record. They're not the easiest people to deal with. I'm gonna cover that up. You know, but we have hope that that would take place. And on the reclamation plan, that deals basically, and that's being changed too. The pit is their permit expires May 31st, 2025, and they then have 2 years to try to do to reclaim the pit in accordance with a state-approved plan, and that's in the process of being redone. But when they stop, and they think that probably the end of next year, the beginning of 2023, they're going to run out of aggregate and they're going to stop production. They want to still use their batch plant, but they'll run out of rock. When they do that, they pump 24/7 out of that pit back into the Columbia River. When they stop pumping, we're going to have about 30 acres of water in the middle of that pit. It'll fill in up to the level of the Columbia River because it'll seep through in there. It's right on the river. So they've got to figure out that. They've got to come up with some terracing of the sides of that so it's not a hazard for kids and animals. So there's a big amount of work that has to be done. Then to come up with a reclamation plan, and then it has to go to the state for their approval. So that's another long project that we're working on.
Okay.
So, but we don't, you know, there's probably nothing that would happen in the pit for a long time anyway.
Okay. Great. Oh, Dave?
Could I just make a couple of observations?
Sure.
So just listening to the conversation, you know, talking in generalities, obviously this is an enormous project, and I've learned a lot about assessing property today. Thank you, by the way. And, you know, you can kind of hear from our professional assessor staff that their hands are kind of tied as to what they can consider or how they can consider it.
Right.
So there's a lot of things out there that assumptions have been made on, and this really kind of comes down to assumptions. A lot of things out there that assumptions have been made on, working on the best information they have available. I would agree with Mr. Adams' comment that this is not really comparable to Road 68 because what it's going to take to develop this is going to be far more expensive than what it took to develop Road 68 because all that got developed was Road 68, and that was a pretty poor job at that. That's led to no end of problems. We want to avoid that, so there's a lot more internal roads and a lot more lane width and things like that that are happening with this property that did not happen in Road 68. And the properties they're different configuration too. I mean, they're a lot deeper, and you know, we're talking about a lot more area in terms of depth rather than just a strip. I think what you know, in terms of the assumptions, so what are the development and mitigation costs that are going to take to make this happen? Like I say, different than what Road 68 development and mitigation costs would be. I don't even know that people paid attention to strep on Road 68, and to the extent that there was any, because most of it was farmed. So it was ag, and there was not any environmental issues. So he's got some fairly significant environmental issues on this. The assessor, unfortunately, did not have the benefit of any of that information. We know more than we knew 2 months ago. So it's kind of a rapidly evolving, you know, I don't know when you had your conversations, but and who the assessor had them with, but there's a lot of people involved in this, including, you know, Mr. Adams' own consultant team. And we're still negotiating what the standards for this are going to be like in there. We don't want to just have sidewalks next to the curb and four lanes. You know, we're talking about boulevard level improvements with street furniture in some places and specialized lighting and planning strips and curb sidewalks, those kind of things that are a little bit more expensive than what beyond the network, a little more expensive just per foot than what you saw up on Road 68. And, you know, I can't help thinking that, and I don't know this question. I think it's something to consider. I heard highest and best use. And that's a term we use a lot when we're talking about assessments for water and sewer, LIDs, things like that. Is it the highest and best use of the property as it's zoned right now? Because most of that property is still zoned RT. It's not really zoned commercial or industrial outside of the strip along Broadmoor. And, as Mr. Adams said, we're working on a sub-area plan, or excuse me, a master plan for just the Broadmoor area. From that, we'll have some land use new land use designations that are actually going to be different in some ways, probably not the commercial, but the open space designation and some of those things, office. They're probably going to see a little bit different balance than what you see in the city's current land use comprehensive plan recently adopted. And after that, that's next year. After that, you could actually do the rezone. So Mr. Adams is correct when he said that probably not going to be any rezones out there on those properties until 2023 that are consistent with the new master plan. Because we're not going to do rezones consistent with the plan that we're redoing, right? So it's going to be consistent with the master plan. So I just want to throw a couple of those things out there to get you them. Not to challenge your thinking at all, but I just want the board to be aware of some of the things that are going on and some of the practical aspects of it. I don't know what timelines are available, you know, for a process like this, how quickly you need to make a decision. You know, if it's appropriate, you know, you were looking for information earlier. We actually have probably more information today than we had a month ago or even 2 months ago that, you know, might be helpful to you on some things, not all things. You know, I listened to the conversation about the shrub step designation. All I can tell you right now is it's not going to be one-to-one. The replacement. It's probably going to be 2-to-1 replacement. So if acre of Mr. Adams' land is going to be, you know, paved over, he's going to have to buy 2 acres someplace else of that level of quality of shrub step. And I don't know what the criteria that Fish and Wildlife is going to have in terms of where. I mean, if you got to go buy it up in Franklin County someplace north where there's no water, it might be pretty cheap, you know. But they might want it close to the river like it is now. And that's going to be more expensive.
Right.
I just wanted to share those thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Greg, do you have any other? Joe, do you have any other questions?
No, I don't.
Okay, and I don't. Nikki?
I would just like to remind the board that the specific appraisal information is available in the packet, which includes comparable sales of parcels that have sold, that we are 22% low on average from those sales already, and that very large development adjustments have already been made to these parcels, which is all included in the appraisals.
Thank you. Okay, then this will conclude the hearing for petition number BE201-22, parcel number 11-521-0031 through BE2012-40 and through parcel number 12610109. There's 19 properties. For owners are Mr. and Mrs. Adams. The time is 10:08 a.m. on Thursday, December 9th. This concludes our meeting. This is the Board of Equalization for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. Hearing 19 properties for Broadmoor Property LLC. We're hearing parcel number 11-521-0031. The board bases its decision on the unique features of land due to the large gravel pit and the most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the value. So we are going with the petitioner's value of $135,000 and the assessor's value, we are not abstaining, of $1,122,500. Second parcel, BE2021-23, parcel number 11521-0032. Petitioner, Broadmoor Properties, LLC. Assessor's assessment, $1,120,300. Appellants, $130,000. We are going with the appellants, $135,000, because based on the decision of the board's unique features of the land, mostly of the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked, and we also recognize the expense of the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the land. Third parcel, BE2021-24, parcel number 11521-0033, owners Broadmoor Properties, LLC. Assessment from the assessor's office, $1,168,200. And the appellant is $140,000. We are going with the appellant for $140,000 based on the decision of the board's unique feature of the land, mostly of the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked. And we recognize the expense to the cost of the development of the property to the highest and best use of the land. Number four, BE2021-25, parcel number 11521-0034, owners Broadmoor Properties, LLC. Assessor's number, $2,402,100. Appellant, $200,000. We're going with the appellant's $200,000. Based on the decision of the board of unique features and land, mostly of the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize the expense to the cost of development of the property and to the highest and best use of the land. Number six, BE2021-26. $11521-0035, owners Broadmoor Properties, LLC. Assessor's value, $1,308,900. Appellant, $190,000. We're going with the appellant's $190,000. Based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land, mostly because of the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked. And we recognize that the cost of the land to be developed is high and to the best use of its value. Next one is BE2021-27. 11521003. Assessor's value, $1,328,900. Appellant, $200,000. We're going with the appellant, $200,000. Based on the decision of the board of unique features of land, mostly of the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the land. BE2021-28, parcel number 15210037, assessor $2,015,600, appellant $425,000. We're going with the appellant's $425,000 based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land because of the large gravel pit and most of the land is landlocked. And we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the land. Next one is BE2021-9, parcel 11521038. Assessors is $1,625,900. Appellant is $340,000. We're going with the appellant of $340,000 based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land, mostly because of the large gravel pit and the land, most of the land is landlocked. And we recognize the large expense of the cost to develop the property and to its highest and best use of the land. Next one is BE2021-30, parcel number 11521039. Assessor's office is $1,384,000. Appellant is $290,000. We're going with the appellant of $290,000 based on the decision of the board of unique features of land due to the large gravel pit, and most of the land is unlocked, and we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property in the highest and best use of the land. Next one is BE2021-31. A parcel number 11521040. Assessors is $2,010,200. The appellant is $210,000. We're going with the appellant of $210,000 based on the decision of the board, unique features of the land, of the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the land. The next one is BE2021-32, parcel number 11521041. The assessor's office is $607,900. The appellant is $70,000. We're going with the appellant at $70,000 based on the decision of the board, finding of the unique features of the land, mostly the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked. And we recognize that the property is expensive to the cost of the development of the property to the highest and best use of the land. Next one is BE2021-33, 11521042. Assessor's office is $859,200. Appellant is $125,000. We're going with the appellant at $125,000. Based on the decision of the board of unique features of land, due to the large gravel pit and mostly the land locked, most of the land is landlocked, excuse me, and we recognize the expense to the cost of the development of the property to the highest and best use of the land. The next one is BE2021-34, parcel number 11521034. Assessor's office is $1,323,000. The appellant is $85,000. We're going with the appellant at $85,000 based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land, the large gravel pit, and mostly most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize the large expense of the cost to develop the land to the highest and best use of the land. Next one is BE2021-35, parcel number 11520044. Assessor's office is $1,867,300. And the appellant is $250,000. We are going with the appellant at $250,000 based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land, most of the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked. And we recognize the large expense and the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the land. Next one is BE2021-36, parcel number 11521045. Assessor's office, $1,676,000. Appellant is $350,000. We're going with the appellant's $350,000. Based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land, most lay because of the large gravel pit and most of the land is landlocked, we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the land. Next one, BE2021-37, parcel number 11521046. Assessor's office is $3,637,600. Appellant is $540,000. We're going with the appellant at $540,000. Based on the decision of the board, unique features of the land, most of the land is landlocked and the large gravel pit. We recognize that the expense to the cost to develop the property to its highest and best use of the land. Next one is BE2021-38. Parcel number is 11521047. Assessor's office is $291,700. Appellant is $50,000. We're going with the appellant at $50,000. Based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land, due to the large gravel pit and most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property to its highest and best use. Next one is BE2021-39, parcel number 11521048. And the assessor's office is $312,800, and the appellant is $50,000. We're going with the appellant at $50,000. Based on the decision of the board of unique features of the land and the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize the expense and the cost to develop the property to the highest and best use of the land. And the last one is BE2021-40, parcel number 12616010109. The assessor's office, $5,195,800. The appellant is $550,000. We're going with the appellant at $550,000. Based on the decision of the board of the unique features of the land, due to the large gravel pit, and most of the land is landlocked, and we recognize that the property, the cost of the property to develop it to the highest and the best use of the land. This concludes the hearing for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. This is Franklin County Board of Equalization. Date is Thursday, December 16, 2021. This is a reconsideration for December 9, 2021, regarding petition BE2021-22, parcel number 11521-0031, BE2021-23, parcel number 11521-0032. Petition BE2021-24, parcel number 11520033. Petition BE2021-25, parcel number 11521-0034. Petition BE2021-26. Parcel number 11521-0035. Petition BE2021-27. Parcel number 11521-0036. Petition BE2021-28. Parcel number 11521-0037. Petition BE2021-29, petition for parcel number 11521-0038, petition BE2021-30, parcel number 11521-0039, petition BE2021-31, parcel number 11521-0040, petition BE2021-32, parcel number 11521-0042, petition BE2021-33, parcel number 11521-0042, petition number BE2021-34, parcel number 11521-0043, petition number BE2021-35, parcel number 11521-004, petition number BE2021-36, parcel number 11521-0045, petition number BE2021-37, parcel number 11521-0046, petition number BE2021-38, parcel number 11521-0047, petition number BE2021-39, parcel number 11521-0048, petition number BE2021-40, parcel number 12616109. Petitioner's name is Broadmont Properties, LLC. Decision of the board is to sustain the assessor. The board's decision to sustain the values as
for the first parcel number ending in 0031, 1,122,500. Second parcel ending in 0032, 1,120,300. Third parcel ending in 0033, assessed value of $1,168,200. Fourth parcel ending in 0034, assessed value of $2,402,100. Fifth parcel ending in 0035, assessed value of $1,308,900. Sixth parcel ending in 0036, assessed value of $1,328,900. Seventh parcel ending in 0037, assessed value $2,015,600. Eighth parcel ending in 0038, $1,625,900. 0039, assessed $1,384,000. 10th parcel ending in 0040, $2,010,200. 11th parcel, $607,900. 12th parcel ending in 0042, $859,200. 13th parcel ending in 0043, $1,323,000. 14th parcel ending in 0044, $1,867,300. 15th parcel ending in 0045, $1,676,000. 16th parcel ending in 0046, $3,637,000. $3,637,600. 17th parcel ending in 0047, $291,700. 18th parcel ending in 0048, $312,800. 19th parcel ending in 0109, $5,195,800. In regards to its decision, the board finds it necessary to provide a certain level of context to help explain why it came to this decision. In general, while the board's desire was to give relief to the applicant, the board found that the owner provided insufficient evidence to sustain his claim that the assessor's value was incorrect and the support of reduction of the assessed value. While the board does not doubt the validity of the statement made in the submitted document, it cannot rely solely on them without more substantial documented evidence. Now, with regard to the assessor's value, the board found it difficult to accept the significant increase based on simply segmented two large parcels into 19 without significant change to the property. The board was also of the opinion the unclear character of this land and the obviously large development cost cannot make this property readily comparable to other recent land sales in the Pasco area. Despite the board's misgivings, the board must sustain the assessor's value. This concludes the board's judgment for this petition on Thursday, December 16, 2021. It is 9:39. Closes the meeting. We are all